I say y'all ready in Xavier Lee.
I was closing my door. I'm sorry.
No, you good. You good. All right, welcome to another installment of the Weird Pastor's Kid podcast. I am your humble and gracious host, Shelton Williams, here with a few of my nearest and dearest friends. Deshaun Activist Davis is here. Xavier Pastor Small is here. And DJ Police Officer Davis is here as well. Man, how you guys doing? Y'all doing all right?
Chilling, man.
Chilling? Chilling like a villain? Everybody doing okay? All right.
Yes, sir.
That's what's up. That's what's up, man. So let's just dive into it, man. Dive into this today. So police reform has been on everyone's minds lately. From Breonna Taylor, George Floyd, Rashard Brooks, et cetera. Many have looked at police and how they do their job. Nationally, the Senate and the House, in my opinion, they're playing politics over people, but they are attempting to try to do some kind of police reform bill. But neither wants to assist each other on how to do this bill, but that's neither here nor there. Police reform is on the forefront of Americans' minds. Now, some have asked for defunding the police, and we've talked about it, you know, here previously. But there are two camps surrounding this defunding the police when it comes to an aspect of police reform. One camp of this defunding the police, they are about abolishing the police, and some would say even abolishing prisons. We can go there another camp as well. But there are some who want to dismantle the police. I call that the radical groups there. They're a little radical here. But they envision a society that's less dependent on government officials with guns. Some argue that this would lead to anarchy on the poor, while the rich would hire private security if we ever went to this route. And most people in this camp have given up on the institution of police. And this is the camp that many news outlets have used to demonize or even to say that this is all that defunding the police is. It's trying to dismantle the police. Well, many people that are in the defunding camp go into this other camp. They don't believe in dismantling or abolishing the police. Another camp in this defunding the police thing, they just believe in taking some of the money from these police, you know, budgets and putting it on the social services. I read an article that said 9 out of 10 calls for police service are for nonviolent encounters. So because of that, many are saying that how about we shift funds from the police to social services like mental health, addiction, and homelessness. This seems to be, for a lot of people, they believe this seems to be a better way to use taxpayers' money. Many have said that if a government official without a gun, you know, a social worker had helped Rashard Brooks, who was drunk at the time, and he would still be alive. However, there's some in this camp see it differently, because a Toledo police officer was shot and killed by a drunk man. Officer Anthony Dia responded after midnight to an intoxicated man holding a beer and walking around a Home Depot parking lot. Now, police wanted to see if he was okay. The guy walked away from the officers and for no apparent reason shot the cop, and this cop eventually died. Now, Deshaun, you are the man. You are someone who is for defunding the police, but this doesn't seem like it would be helpful. I mean, a social worker, if we would have sent a social worker out to this particular call, that social worker would have been dead. Okay, doesn't it seem to prove that we need police even for things that seem trivial or small? So I'm going to lead it to you. What do you think about that?
I mean, to be honest, if the cop got shot and died and a social worker would have got shot and died, I don't see how that means that we need the police. Because him being a cop didn't help anything. Him having a gun didn't help anything. I mean, I guess he could have shot back at the guy. Like, I don't. And we would have had a shootout in a Home Depot parking lot, which would have been a larger tragedy. Maybe we would have two people dead. I don't know. But I don't see how, like de-escalating somebody with a gun doesn't require a gun or a taser or any weapons. It requires de-escalation skills, which we've seen police don't have. So, because we've seen them escalate situations that didn't involve guns into fatal situations. This one was just... I mean, I'm not trying to dismiss the guy who died. Like, every life matters. Like, that's messed up that happened. But it's like a one-off situation. like cops don't get shot very often. That's a very rare, once in a blue moon. I mean, like this year, twice as many cops have died from COVID as have died from getting shot. Like that, cops don't get killed every day. So I don't see the situation as like some larger trend or reflecting anything about police.
Okay. All right. So you're saying here that, okay, just because this sad situation happened, you don't think that this is a broader discussion about the fact of we need police, because we don't know. For example, I know that I just read that 9 out of 10 situations that policemen go to, that they're called for, right? They call the 911, 9 out of 10 of them is for a nonviolent encounter. However, that does not mean that when a policeman gets there, that the situation won't get escalated like it was in this particular case, right? So, I mean, Officer Davis, man, what do you have to say hearing, you know, I mean, to you, I know from being in the police community there, I know you're probably like, man, you know, this shows that we're needed, because you don't know how a particular call could be escalated to something like, you know, something that happened, you know, just, you know, we don't understand why this drunk guy even decided to do that. So yeah, could you kind of speak on that?
All right, well, for me, you know, I really I don't want to use Anthony Diaz's death per se to sway what people think, what they don't think. I mean, people have to make that decision of what they want for us. But what happened to him obviously was tragic. And what happened was because I went and I listened to everything. I listened to the 911 call. And basically a woman called the police saying that there was an intoxicated person in the parking lot of the Home Depot that was trying to drive home. And she told the dispatch that, yeah, he was holding a beer. He was asking everybody in the parking lot if they could jump his car. And she said that he was heavily intoxicated and that she saw him open 3 other beers before he got to the one that he was holding. So naturally they send police out. Officer Dia arrived on scene and immediately found the vehicle, found the suspect. He got out of his vehicle and just went up to the dude to try and see what was wrong. And he started walking away from him. So Anthony told him, you know, come here. And when he didn't, he started to pick up the pace and run. So Anthony Dia closed the distance. He started kind of chasing after him. The suspect turned a corner around Home Depot, I guess in the Garden Center. So there was a second where Anthony Dia lost sight of him. And when he caught up, the suspect turned around with a .22 caliber revolver and shot Anthony Dia in his armpit, which is a place that our bulletproof vests don't protect. And it's extremely fatal. You get hit there because you have a lot of arteries, so you bleed out. And Anthony Dia did return fire. I don't know that he hit the suspect, but he did try and defend himself. And, you know, just a few seconds after that, other officers arrived on scene trying to give him first aid. They brought him. They didn't wait for an ambulance. They just threw him in the back of one of their patrol vehicles and tried to drive to the hospital. And the last thing that Anthony Dia said over the radio was, "Tell my family I love them." And he said that twice. That's something that I hope to God I never have to hear. But that's what happened, you know. And people at home can decide, do we need police? Do we not need police? Do we need to send social workers out there? You know, whatever. That's something that people are going to have to decide. You're going to have to decide what you want from us. But moral of the story is, you know, a father of 2 kids, a husband, a son, lost their life doing exactly what I've done 1,000 times, what other officers have done thousands of times. And really, you don't know what's going to happen. You don't. I know that people, when they hear officers talking about, you know, oh, we're at war or whatever, describing our work as like a war zone or whatever the case is, you know, and you don't understand, and that's fine. You know, it's like people don't understand because you don't do what I do. You know, I put a bulletproof vest on when I go to work. And that's not because it looks cool, but that's because there are people out here that actively will try to kill me because of what I'm doing. 27 officers died this year from gunfire. 27. Yeah, COVID's more, but so far 27 officers have died from gunfire. That's who's died. That's not who has been shot and survived. But that's just counting officers who have died this year from gunfire. And a lot of times, if we don't die from gunfire, it's because of the training that we do have, people applying tourniquets, people, you know, defending themselves effectively. You know, I can speak for my city. Two of my friends, actually, a couple of months ago, were involved in a shooting, and they were actively being shot at. And thank God, neither one of them died or were hit. But this is real. And, you know, I understand that if you do not do what we do, then you don't get it. And that's fine, you know. But this is happening. It happens all the time in our country, you know. And I think it's important that we recognize that.
All right, Xavier, man, you hear in his, I think it is true that there needs to be a level of, you know, some of empathy, right, that happens with, you know, any kind of police that die, right? And of course, we don't want to minimize that, you know, we don't want to sit back and say, like, yeah, it doesn't, you know, that doesn't matter. It is good that it's only 27, right? Like, it's you know, 127 is 27 officers that didn't need to die, right? They're just doing what they want to do, and they end up dying. But it's in such a, how can I say this, such a dangerous field. I'm actually surprised it's only 27, to be honest with you. But anyways, Xavier, you're hearing all this. You're hearing the different perspectives. What were you thinking about that? I mean, of course, like you mentioned, it's a sad scene. But what are you feeling about this particular case in general, man? Like, what could there, anything could have been done to prevent this? Or it's just one of those dumb things that happen sometimes?
I don't know. I was reading up on the case, and I don't know how, I'm not sure what, you know, what Officer Dia could have done different. You know what I'm saying? The guy decided to run. And, you know, the natural thing is going to be to, you know, to pursue and see what's going on. You know, what's going on with that? Why'd you run? You know, what's going on with that? And, so that's tough, man. And I really felt for that officer and for his family, you know, because of what had happened with that. You know, you just, some people just do dumb things, you know, and that's what that was. That guy was just being dumb. And I read the report, and then he went into the woods and killed himself. So I'm not sure, like, what is that? Like, that doesn't make any sense as to what was going on there. I guess his, I don't know if it's just him, just, he was maybe that drunk. I don't know, but, I was chewing a lot here, though, thinking about, like, what Deshaun said, though, as we were talking about maybe approaching DUIs a different way. But in that situation, there was not even a chance to really de-escalate the situation. I mean, it got there, and it just got hostile quick. He, you know, he ran, and the police officer ran after him, and, like, you know, and then he shot him. It was that fast, you know, so. There wasn't any time for there to be any discourse or anything like that. So just kind of thinking, like, that seems to me like one of those situations where whether that guy was addressed by another person that was a civil officer or by, you know, your standard police officer, that either way somebody was gonna die. You know what I'm saying? Die tonight. I mean, does that mean that if there was somebody else that came out that wasn't a police officer, that he wouldn't have shot him? I don't know. You can only speculate that. And so it's just messy and sad. you know, to me.
I'm gonna let you close off this segment a little bit, Deshaun. I think, and of course, like we've been talking about, you know, these type of situations, right? That seem to be a nonviolent situation. That's why we were analyzing because we're all of us Monday quarterback. A lot of these police shootings and things that happen, we go back and try to figure out what could have been done or should have been done or should have been handled differently. Do you think this is another case of where it's like we have a system, a systemic thing, a different way we could have handled these type of situations? Or do you think that this is just one of those times where it's just an unfortunate situation? Like dealing with any type of dangerous job, they're going to be unfortunate situations, right? Is this one of those type of situations? Or do you think there's any way we could have looked at this differently?
Honestly, I just think it's like a – it's just an unfortunate thing that happened. Like I said, like Xavier said, I can't speak to if someone else came out, if they would have been shot or not. Who knows? If a different cop came out, would he have been shot or not? Who know? Like, you know, if things were different, things would be different. You know, there's no way to know that. But like I said, I think this is just like a one-off really crazy situation. Like DJ said, like 27 cops have been shot and killed in 2020. That's less than one per state. That's almost one every two states. You know what I mean? Like it's not like a super common thing that happens. It's just a bad thing that happened to happen. So like I said, I don't know. I mean, we could dig into that guy's life, I guess, to figure out systemically, like what got him to that place. Like, why was he drunk in a parking lot? Why was he drunk in a parking lot with a gun? We can dig into other systemic things. Like, is he an impoverished person who's drunk because he's dealing with his problems? Why does he have access to a gun if he's clearly mentally unstable? There's other systemic things there, but I don't think policing is the system that caused this to happen. That's just, like I said, the guy who happened to get the call.
Right. And that's one of those things, one of those sad situations about, man, police officers, firemen, people in the military, those type of jobs that can be dangerous at times. You know, it's one of those things. I feel like it's just an unfortunate aspect of the job where one day, sadly, a dumb, stupid thing like this could potentially happen. And as we're talking about these things, man, I really want to talk about we're looking at policemen, police departments and police things that as a whole and what ways we can do differently. DeRay McKesson, who's an activist, they asked him a question about police reform, and he had 8 ways that of police reform. Different ways, if you asked him, these are ways police reform could be differently. I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to tell you what those 8 things are in another situation. Then I'm going to start off with you, DJ, on this. But this is the things that he mentioned about police reform. He says that we should, number one, ban chokeholds and strangleholds. Number two, require de-escalation. Number three, require a warning before a shooting. Number four, exhausting all alternatives before shooting. Number five, a duty to intervene. Number six, banning shooting at moving vehicles. Number seven, establishing use of force continuum. And what he meant by that is establishing when force is appropriate in different situations and circumstances. And number eight, requiring all force to be reported. It's his 8 ways of police reform, right? And also I was looking at something up about in Hawaii. They will disclose to lawmakers the identity of an officer upon his or her suspension or discharge. So I guess you're just going to let the state and then let people know every time an officer gets suspended and every time they end up getting discharged. But I want to ask you, DJ, as you're listening to some of these things that, you know, the activist here says, some of these things I think are already part of your policy in your department. You know, already, if I'm under some of the things he's mentioned, I remember I'm thinking to myself, I think you've told me that you guys already implemented some of these things that he's suggesting. Am I correct in that?
Yeah, literally everything that he mentioned is already things that we do. Every last one. What was the list that he called it, actually? Because I had seen it before.
It's the 8 ways of police reform is what
eight is. Ways of police. Okay, because there, man, because even my department, like we have a Facebook page, the department does, and they went on and basically responded to those 8 questions and posting like what our policy on all of those things are already. So I think, you know, if we're talking about how things can be better in certain aspects, I do think that a little more transparency, or heck, a lot more transparency, is fantastic for community relations. So I think we should be more transparent, but literally everything's already a thing. So, and I mean, hey, I'll hit it from the top if you want. I mean, chokeholds, you know, for my department, our policy is basically if you're in a deadly force situation, then any force necessary is acceptable if you're in a deadly force situation. So, I mean, which makes sense, you know, but as far as like chokeholds go and stuff, that's, we aren't taught to do chokeholds, okay? And what a chokehold is basically it's a hold that restricts a person's airway. So it crushes down on the trachea, and that can cause a lot of like permanent damage. And so, you know, unless it's like a deadly force situation and that's literally my last thing, I can't just go and do a chokehold. What a lot of departments are taught to do, and what we are taught in, it's called a carotid restraint. And it's actually a jujitsu technique, really. And basically what it is, people mistake it for a chokehold pretty often, but it's a technique where instead of crushing down on the trachea, you use your bicep and your forearm and you clamp down on the carotid arteries. And basically what that does, it stops blood flow to the brain and it just causes you to pass out. And it's something that literally you put it on for like 3 seconds, someone passes out, and as soon as you let go, give it a couple more seconds and they come to. Our department policy on that is basically you have less lethal force right here. So that's like, you know, punches, kicks, tasers, batons, stuff like that. And then you have deadly force. So the carotid restraint is basically the middleman. So basically, if you have exhausted all less lethal options and they don't work and you're about to go to deadly force, you can try a carotid restraint before going to deadly force if you're in that situation. But it's not something that, you know, you just willy-nilly like, oh, carotid restraint. Like, you know, it's not something that you can do flippantly. It's something that, okay, my last chance before I go to deadly force, carotid restraint. And it's safe if it's applied correctly. Like I said, it's a jujitsu technique, and a lot of people in the civilian realm get put out every day practicing jujitsu because they're doing this technique. I've been put out using this technique. I've used this technique, and obviously I'm here, you know, I'm fine. You know, so it's just one of those things where if you are trained to use it and you use it correctly, it's a safe technique, but it's not a chokehold.
Okay, I got you. So Xavier, I was mentioning some of these aspects of police reform and things of this nature. I don't know, because I forgot, I should have hit you up a little bit earlier about this, but, you know, listening to some of these things and even listening to what DJ said, a lot of these, some of these things are already, you know, in their policy. But do you think that maybe we need to take it from being a department policy and make it like law? Like, if you don't do these things, we can actually charge you. Do you think that would be more implemental, or you're like, hey, if it's already into the policy, that's just the way it should be?
I think it's difficult because I don't think every case that you'll get, and I'm sure DJ can probably agree with me on this, but every situation is different. Like, of course you want to start from, like the first regulation, but if it's already jumped to like a deadly force situation, you're not going to chase down a guy who's got an AR-15 and say, hey man, let me put you in a chokehold real quick. You know what I'm saying? Like, you can't, you know what I'm saying? Like, I'm not anti deadly force. Sometimes you have to, but I'm saying, like, I think if all the steps are there, are possible to start from one, you know what I'm saying? Then those need to be taken. You know what I'm saying? But sometimes you got to skip steps because of the severity of the situation. So, I mean, I guess you could like make it law that it has to, happen, you know what I'm saying? And it, but I think there's going to have to definitely be stipulations that are also written in, like, if this happens, then you can skip. If this happens, you can skip. And I don't know how much more, like, affected that would be. I think that would be probably be a little messy because there's going to have to be, like, a lot of, like, fine-tuning in order for it to be done the way that, and that's going to take time, you know? So I'm not saying it's not worth it, but I'm saying I would be more, and I'm not sure if they do this already, but I'd be satisfied if there were regular regulations that were gone over, you know what I'm saying, with the police force. Like, it might be like once a month, we got to go over this, you know, go over proper maneuvers and stuff like that, to where there's something more, it's like, I mean, you know that I'm a preacher, so like I preach to people, but a lot of times it's not stuff that people don't know. It's not like, oh, that's new, I never heard it before, but it's a lot of times it's a lot of reminders. And it's not that they don't know, it's just that you gotta be like, oh yeah, that is a thing. You know what I'm saying? So I think having more of like a regular, I would be more satisfied if there's like a regular, like a routine, so that whenever something happens, there is no excuse. Like, nah, bro, we go for this once a month. You've been on the force for 5 years. If we've been doing this once a month for 5 years, like, there's no excuse for you. You should have done better. You should have known to have your body cam on before you approach the person. You should have known, you know what I'm saying? So they should, of course, if they passed and went through police training, they already know all those things. But I think having the regular and having it to be more muscle memory, you know what I'm saying? I think that would more suffice for me versus like making it law. That's just my position.
Okay. So now I want you guys to hold that thought, because I know some of you guys are listening. You heard what Xavier says, and I want to bring DJ in just a moment to even talk about training, because me and DJ have talked about the police training and the importance of it and the necessity of more, you know, of a more refresher course, more training on certain different things. We've talked about that, but I want to bring you in here, Deshaun, about the aspects of police reform. Now, you know, I don't want to be speak for you, but now we're talking about, I know you ain't really about police reform, but I'm just saying, okay, if you can think about some ways that, because this is what I'm thinking, this is what I think I told this to DJ before too, is I think that there's what I consider police reform, things that are needed now, okay? And I'm looking at like the aspect of defunding the police and all these other avenues that people may have as something that may be later, because the thing is, to me, defund the police and all these other ideas that are more radical ideas to a lot of people, because you got to make a lot of people agree on this. I just don't feel like you can get enough support in a short amount of time. Okay, so that's why I'm asking. Like, I think police reform is a more of an immediate thing. But let me ask you this: where, listening to the things, you know, the activist DeRay McKesson had to say, and even something that, you know, DJ was mentioning, Xavier was mentioning, how are you feeling about all this?
I mean, first, I just want to throw out there, I don't think defund the police is like a long-term action, because LA already did it. Like, LA already cut like hundreds of millions of dollars from their police budget. Like, they did it in overnight. It's very doable if we push them to do it. I just want to throw that out. That's number one.
Okay. Like, all right.
So just to establish, I don't think that's some like, well, maybe someday. No, their city is doing it right now. It's doable if you make people do it. But in terms like of the reforms you're talking about,
on a national level, though, like,
well, that's the thing is, police aren't national. You don't have to make it pass on a national level.
Okay.
These are not national conversations. If your city, I live in Pensacola, Florida. We are pushing Pensacola and Escambia County to defund the police. We're pushing Escambia County sheriffs to defund. We're not asking Miami to do that. That's Miami's problem. That's for their activists to push for. But anyway, regarding the reforms, that was just to mention that point. I just want to throw it out there.
Go ahead.
But regarding the reforms themselves, like, the fact that everything on DeRay's list is already in act in DJ's police department, and there's still like an outlandish number of police killings every year, tells me that those reforms are pointless. Because even if you make them like federal law, like, who's enforcing those laws? Are police going to police the police? Because they don't do that now. There's countless stories. Like, I just read an article today. Well, I'm reading through it. It's like a long form essay, but it's called like Confessions of a Bastard Cop, where he worked in the LAPD for 10 years, and he's just telling all kinds of wild stuff that happened that he saw. With that, he didn't even break the law. He talked about times that he tried to report police officers, and he said, even my higher ups don't like snitches. Mm. Like, like he said in the academy, he got in trouble for reporting guys being sexist and racist. Like, it, like, if we make those things laws, who's policing the police? I'm not trusting the police to police the police. Again, no disrespect to DJ, but like the fact that you frequently refer to them as your brothers, not for nothing. There's a Kanye line that I always talk to, I always like reference when I'm talking about my brother. Xavier knows my brother. Bro was a wild boy. Bro has committed many crimes. In the words of Kanye, if you say you ain't did it, then you ain't did it. And if you did, then that's family business. Like, I'm not snitching on my brother.
Yeah.
I know he commits crimes, but I ain't finna tell on him for what? That's my brother.
Yeah.
So the fact that like police officers even frame themselves as like, that's my brother, we're on the line together, like we're going to war together, like all that nonsense, that tells me you're not gonna police your brother. So like, why? I'm not waiting on y'all to police yourselves. I'm not waiting on laws to tell you to be better. We've been trying that for 40 years. Police killings are on the rise. They're not going down. The numbers aren't shrinking. Police deaths are on the are going down, but the killings aren't. And again, like I said, all them reforms already being on the books tells me those reforms don't do any good because they're already on the books and they're
stopping. Okay, all right. So there's a lot that you just said there, and I know DJ's going to respond to all to a lot of that. All right, okay. You know what? I'm not even going to set up the question. DJ, you heard what he said. Go ahead and respond.
Okay, I mean, look, we can... Bro, like, we can sit here and talk about, like, oh, you know, police killings on the rise and whatnot. The question that I wish people would ask and take the time to research is all of the police killings that happened, how many of those were justified? Like, hands down, justified. See what I'm saying? So I can sit here and say, like, oh, you know, last year police killed, there were 1,000 people who were shot and killed by police. Okay, cool. How many violent calls did police all over the country respond to last year? Over 1,000, I promise you that. How many of those calls were resolved peacefully? Over 1,000, I promise you that. You know, and here's the thing, okay? Yeah, I refer to police officers as my brothers. We do stand on the line together. We do go out in our city and, you know, we go out there and quite frankly, we do what everybody else is afraid to do. Because to be completely honest, you know, there are so many people out here who could be doing this job, but either they've been called to do something else, which is totally cool, or they just don't want to, which is also totally cool. But the fact is, we're out here doing what no one else wants to do, okay? And like I said, in my department alone, lost 2 people this year, at the beginning of this year. Like I also said, 2 of my friends have been involved in a shooting this year, got shot at, okay? Returned fire, it happened. I know plenty of people on my department who have been shot, who have been involved in shootings where they are actively being shot at. So yes, police shootings are on the rise. Why? Because we have a lot of individuals who are shooting at us, who are trying to kill us. Guess what? You can go online and Google how many police officers died in 2019. 5 of those were vehicular assault, aka someone intentionally ran a police officer over with their vehicle. Vehicles are deadly weapons if you use them as such. So yes, police shoot at vehicles. If you're going to try and run me over with your car, yes, I will shoot you. If you're a regular person and you have a gun and someone tries to run you over with their car, I promise you, if the only way for you to survive is to shoot, you will do it. Like I said before, it's so easy for people who do not do what we do, to look at a computer and look at numbers and say, oh, this is a problem, but you won't step into my car. You won't sign up for the academy and come do what I do. You won't get out in the streets and be where I'm at. It's easy to sit back and say, oh, well, this is a problem. Bro, you ain't out here, you know? Y'all don't know. I've had ride-alongs who are just riding in my car ask me for a bulletproof vest. Bro, if my job is not that dangerous or like if there's no reason to fear for your life or whatever, why do you need a bulletproof vest? My own father won't ride in my police car with me. Why? Because he does not want to see something happen to me, even on my off time. Because he understands, guess what? People out here trying to kill y'all. Shoot, it happens, you know? And I'm not saying that we don't need reform. I'm not saying that we don't need to be better. I'm not even saying that every shooting that happens or every police officer killing is right. And every officer that I work with personally would say the same things. And I can't speak for, you know, every officer in the country, but I can speak to what I know. You know, I can speak to what I've experienced. And I can tell you this, when we see an officer doing something that is wrong, we will be the first people to stand up and say something. But the problem is, to be completely honest, in society, society just doesn't like it when we're like, no, there wasn't anything wrong with that. I would have done the same thing. That's how we're trained to do. Society just does not like that answer. And it's like, I don't know what to tell you. I can't, you know, if you're going to be upset because an officer uses proper force in a given situation, you know, and you're like, oh, they shouldn't have killed this person. Well, you know, the loss of life is tragic and I hate it. But just because I'm saying, man, I understand why it happened. Because that's how we're trained and I would have done the same thing. Got to get past that answer, okay? Because it's not like we just sitting around here trying to cover for each other every 2 seconds. That's not how it is. That's how it is on TV. That might be how it is, like you said, each department's different. Each city's different. That might be how it is in one city, but I guarantee you this, 99.9% of the cops out here ain't doing that, you know? And honestly, honestly, this is how I've been feeling lately, and I'm just going to vent. I don't really care, okay? This is how I've been feeling lately, personally. If you want to talk police reform, if you want to talk about how I need to use force, being someone who has not been trained the way that I have been trained, I strongly urge you go through a citizens academy if your police department does one so that you can have some further insight as to what we do. Go on a ride along. If you've been on a ride along, go on another one. Go on a ride along with night shift. Go see some real danger. Don't go on a ride along where all you do is, oh, we pulled cars over and, you know, wrote people tickets. Nah, go on a ride along where guess what? Hey, you're going to have to stay in the car because this call might get bad. Oh, and if it does get bad, here's my rifle. If you got to come save me, here's my med kit. If you got to throw a tourniquet on me. Shelton, you laughing, but bro, I've said that to people. I've been like, look, hey, here is my med kit. Okay, if I get shot, bring this to me so that I can get to work and live. Okay, so you want to do police reform? Come to me with work, please. Go to work. Just please come to me with work, and then let's talk about it.
All right, man. You go ahead. Talk. Okay, talk that talk, man. You go ahead because okay, and from your point of view, it's like, man, police reform. You know, you want a Monday quarterback it. You don't got a Monday quarterback. You can be a Sunday quarterback and actually see what it is to be on the field. And you got a homeboy coming at you, you know, ready to tackle you. What are you going to do?
Because, bro, like, look, I'll be honest, okay? I have had two people try to commit suicide by me, by using me. Two people. Seriously. So, like, it, you know, and I understand, and look, I don't feel disrespect when people talk about what they don't really understand, because it's cool, you know, because I know I talk about things that I don't understand, you know, and I try not to, but it happens. We all do it sometimes, but, like, legit, it just blows my mind sometimes. I'm like, look, like, seriously, that's why I'm like, look, come to work with me. You know, like, seriously, like, hop in the seat, go see what we do, and then let's talk. Because I'm not saying that reform is bad, but if you listen to what police departments are saying, oh, yeah, I'll tell you how we need to reform. It's not by defunding us. It's not by abolishing us. You know what I'm saying? Like, I can tell you things that need to be changed and things that need to be improved so that a suspect can go home safely and so that I can go home safely. But, you know, if you're not going to listen to that, that's cool, but come ride with me and then we can talk.
All right. So let's talk about that for a second. What are some ways, because we, at the end of the day, on both sides of the aisle, we want people to get home safe. We want people to not die, right? From either side. We don't want policemen to be dead. We don't want people on the streets to be dead. But what would you say would be helpful, DJ, to help with that idea?
Okay, so for police officers, I think that we really do need more training when it comes to defensive tactics. I'm a defensive tactics instructor at my police department. So I go out to the police academy and I help instruct the recruits in defensive tactics. And we get really, really good training. But the problem is that it is in the academy. Once you graduate from the academy, a lot of times departments either don't do anything defensive tactics wise to train the guys, or they do very minimal of it. So like X was saying, like, hey, if we went over stuff once a month, you know, that would suffice. And I'm like, honestly, we need to be doing more than that, in my opinion. And there are some ways that we do, you know, like anytime we go out and shoot for my department specifically, if we go to the range to shoot like for quals or whatever it is we're doing, we have to go over our use of force policy. Like we have to read it before we begin shooting. You know what I mean? So the use of force policy is always, always, always being reintroduced to us. But as far as the technical skills that come with defensive tactics, it's one of those skills that if you don't use it, you lose it. And, you know, if we're not training in that, basically it's like this. If you're not training to fight and use less lethal means often, like just your hands is what I mean, then a lot of times you rely too heavily on what you have on your belt. So like you rely too heavily on pepper spray, on your taser, on your baton. And then what happens is when those items don't work, well, then you freak out. It's kind of like I equate it to playing basketball. Okay, if you've never played basketball in your life and you get thrown right in the middle of the game and someone throws you the ball and you get trapped, you freeze. Like, man, I don't know what to do. Do I dribble? Do I like throw it out? Like, I don't know what to do. And a lot of times when that happens, people throw the ball away. They travel, double dribble, throw up a shot that they have no business throwing up, or the ball gets stolen. But if you practice and you know how to play the game, then when you get the rock, even if people try and trap you, man, okay, it's no sweat. You're calm. Why? I know what to do. It's not a big deal. Like, you know, and I can go into this all day because it's a pet peeve of mine, but more training in defensive tactics is one issue that I think would be very helpful. The second issue is I think physical fitness needs to be a top priority for people outside of the academy. In the academy, it's basically like boot camp, and they really drill you on physical activity. And some departments do good, and they maintain that, and they're like, okay, you have, you know, a biannual physical test that you have to take. So twice a year, we're doing a physical test. Once a year, we're doing a physical test. But there are a lot of departments that have nothing. And so you get out of the academy, you get out of field training, your first couple of years as an officer, you're fit because you're motivated to do it, and then you let yourself go. And to me, like, if there's one thing I cannot stand, like, legit, it's seeing overweight officers. Because legit, I'm like, bruh, if you don't have the discipline to take care of yourself and make sure that you are at the top of your game as far as fitness so that you can better serve your community, you don't need to be doing this. Because when you let yourself go, you're doing a huge disservice to yourself, your department, and your community. Because what happens is you see these overweight officers get involved in situations that, okay, I got to chase this dude. Now I caught this dude. Now I'm fighting this dude. And by this time, you're gassed. I mean, the tank is empty. But you have to safely get this person into custody. And if you're winded, you can't do that. And so you're over here getting your butt handed to you, and you're like, well, okay, I got a deadly force because that's all I got. And it's like, bruh, you know what? Had you taken the initiative to take care of yourself and train like you're supposed to, it wouldn't have escalated to that situation. So those are the top two things that I think if that changed on a national level, you know, and I just say national, like if every department adopted that, because I know every department's different. But if every department adopted those two things, you would see a drastic decrease in police uses of force.
So you're saying, okay, so now, and this is why it's a counter argument, because to implement what you're describing, we would need to actually increase the police budget to get this stuff done. increase the police budget for training, increase the police budget to make sure that these police officers are in shape, increase it, right? So you're coming from an angle of we need more resources. We need more of the resources done. We need more of taxpayers' money to help us when it comes to making sure that we're not, you know, dependent on our belt, right? We're more, right. more, you know, so I understand, I get that. That's actually, you know, really, you know, smart idea there. But I have to close it. I'm going to close this though with Deshaun, because I want you to, because I think the sad part about it is we're coming from two different unique perspectives, right? We have one perspective of just being nicer in the way that we police, right? And that's one aspect. And then we have another aspect of saying, like, maybe the policing in general is the issue. Instead of, like, having a nicer, like, I'll put it to you this way. I think I mentioned this maybe on another podcast, and maybe I didn't, and I'm just in my head. But back in the day, when Deshaun, when you used to go to PCC and you learned the history stuff, they used to tell you that there were some people, you know, especially in the Catholic Church, that wanted to reform the Catholic Church. And there were other people in the Catholic Church that was like, I'm a separatist. I'm going to separate myself from the Catholic Church, do my own thing, go ahead and start our own churches, because there's no way to fix the corruption that's in the Roman Catholic Church, right? So you had two different opinions of thought of reforming what was there, the corruption and everything that was in it. And other people was like, nah, you can't reform it. Everything is kind of messed up and destroyed here. So I want you to kind of, because I think most of people that listen to this podcast, you know, they actually would agree with, you know, with where DJ stands on this. And I want them to hear a different perspective on it and saying, okay, it's not just about nicer police officers, right? Or people just being nicer to the poor, but also thinking of a whole different way of actually just policing in general. So yeah, could you kind of speak on that for a little bit and why the pushback so much about those type of ideas?
Yeah, I mean, to start with your example, like with the Catholic Church and like reformers versus like separatists and stuff, I'm going to quote Angela Davis. I don't want to spoil the book for you. I don't know how far you got into her book yet, Sheldon. I'm a quoter, but I'm not going to like spoil what she said. But she basically said, like, history is on the side of the abolitionist. Like, people who grew up in the times of slavery didn't think that there would ever be, the people thought that you had to reform slavery and make it nicer, or, you know, let's limit where slavery can be, and like all these different reforms of how slavery works instead of just getting rid of slavery. Because they didn't think, people couldn't imagine a world that didn't have slavery in it, because that's all they ever known. People who, like, this was her talking about abolishing prisons, not police, although the two go hand in hand. People didn't think, like, the Catholic Church would ever not exist, and then other people left. Like, someone, what's the guy's name? Wow, I'm blanking. My history degree's
letting me down
right now. Martin Luther.
Yeah.
My history degree's letting me down right now. But yeah, no, like, Martin Luther was like, no, we're leaving. 95 Theses on the door, like, I will say that we're leaving. And she, like I said, she gave a bunch of examples like that. Like, slavery is obviously the big one, but there's like a lot of, there's been policies and things that people, the death penalty. Before there were prisons, they just killed people or they tortured you in public. People didn't think that you could do anything else. And then they made jails. They were like, oh, we could not torture you. We could not boil you alive. Like, that's like, maybe we don't have to do that. So like I said, history is usually on the side of the abolitionist. History, the arc of history bends towards justice. That's like a common quote among historians. So, yeah, in terms of, like, why I don't believe in reform, like I said, I'm not trying to disparage DJ and tell him his job's not hard or anything like that, but at the end of the day, like, and I understand, like, I haven't done your job. I do have friends who have been to police academy. I do have friends who have been on ride-alongs. I have friends, like, in my personal life, like, who have tried to be cops and ended up, like, stopped. Like, they didn't proceed because they didn't. They thought they could be, like, I'm going to go be a cop and change things. And then as they got deeper into it, were like, I don't think I can change things. But I don't think that's realistic. They weren't scared of the job. They just were like, this is not realistic. Well, I just lost my train of thought. But yeah, like I said, at the end of the day, like, and I know, like, you know, I'm not a cop, so I can't just throw statistics out there. But 27 cops have been shot this year. 500 and, like, I think it's 506 Americans have been killed by cops. Y'all are winning that battle at a 19-1 clip. So it's like, the numbers say, and I'm not saying your job is not dangerous, the numbers say you're not in as much danger as a lot of cops perceive themselves to be, And I'm going to reference that article again I was talking about, that Confessions of a Bastard Cop. He talked about how in training, like, they really, like, drilled into his head, like, here's a video of, like, a guy, like, walking up on a pullover, and he got shot just out of nowhere. Like, most people don't do that. Like I said, we were talking about the guy, the officer who got killed earlier. That's not the norm. That's not – most people are afraid of killing cops. As a black person, I know I can kill a regular American, and 50-50 I get off depending on what happened. I kill a cop, they're throwing the book at me, and I'm going to get my ass beat in jail every day for the rest of my life. Because y'all see – again, y'all see each other as, like, brothers and fraternity and all that stuff. You killed one of ours. Like, it's one of those things. So it's like, at the end of the day, I just don't believe in reform. I don't – we've tried reforms. Reforms have been being attempted. America's prison population, we have, like, I think it's like 25 or 30% of the world's prisoners. This is, again, going back to the prison abolition book that Shelton's reading right now that I read. Our prison numbers have skyrocketed while crime has gone down. There's less people committing violent crime now than 50 years ago, and we have, like, 50 times as many people in jail. Policing is fundamentally broken because it's tied to prison. One, it's a lot of prison and the legal system are tied to money. Bail, what's it called? You pay legal fees if you get arrested. You have to pay after you get bailed out. After you go to court, you have to pay for that. You have to pay for, what's it called? When you're in jail, you have to pay once you get out of jail. You have fees that you accrued by being in jail. You have to pay the state to arrest you. So it's like a lot of those things are tied to money. Prisoners are used as slave labor. That's a common, like, thing now, especially with Ava DuVernay's documentary. There's a lot of things that push arrests up that don't have anything to do with actual crime going up. Violent crime is way down. Because quite frankly, we live in the future and there's less people on the street just doing wild stuff. Most people have cell phones and internet and all kinds of ways to distract themselves that aren't going out and running the streets doing whatever. There's a lot of evidence that crime is down and arrests are up. Police killings are up. And again, I'm not saying there's not a dude who might have shot at your boy. I get that happened. But in terms of, like, in politics, and this is, like, a thing that Facebook and social media and, like, internet arguments have ruined. Anecdotes aren't facts. I can tell a story of something that happened to me at school as a teacher this week. That doesn't negate the trends that are actually happening on a national level with teachers or in the state level or even in my district. Me saying I have one student who wasn't supposed to graduate, but he overcame, doesn't negate our graduation rates. Again, I'm not saying your friends haven't been in danger. I'm not saying you've never been in danger. But those stories don't negate the 19-to-1 clip that cops are killing people at versus people being killing cops at. Like I said, those things, mostly for me, the financial aspects of arrests, the legal system, and prisons, are why I don't think police reform is useful, because your police are not incentivized but pushed to arrest. Like I said, that article I read about the guy who called himself a bastard cop, like, he said we were all bastards. He said they used to have competitions in LA to see who could arrest somebody for the most obscure crime. He would go. He said he would harass and arrest homeless people for being too close to a railroad track, or pull people over for having too many brooms on a truck. Like, just he said it was like a game to them of, like, how can we arrest or ticket somebody for something stupid? Because at the end of the day, they had numbers. There's numbers they're supposed to hit, and his people at the top were pushing that on them. So it's like the system itself is geared towards arrest more people, ticket more people, charge more money, and I don't think giving police more money has solved anything. Giving them more money hasn't helped. Reforming things hasn't helped. And like I said, abolition, I know people are always like, well, what are we going to do with X, Y, and Z? There's a lot of answers. There's people doing that work who have devised frameworks for what we do in all these situations you have questions for. You just have to read them. You have to actually go out and find them. You can't, if you're just asking because you don't want to know the answer, then that's a pointless argument.
Gotcha. We're going to have to end it on that particular note there, especially when it comes to that, because I understand it. I understand if you look at it from a national level, especially with policing, and I looked this up today, that violent crimes are going down. Like, I looked at that the other day, especially arrests for violent crimes, that has been going down. I looked up some stuff on, like, FBI website about violent crimes, things of that nature, because I'm also going to be talking about some of these stats that I read today about crime. When I'm introducing the next topic here as well. But I'm going to talk about this here. We've talked about police reform and things of that nature, but let's jump into this. All right. In Atlanta, many people in the last few weeks have been protesting because of what happened to Rashard Brooks at the Wendy's. I mean, the Wendy's got burned down. Things were happening around there. But apparently around that same area in that same neighborhood on July 4th weekend, an 8-year-old girl was shot and killed. All right. And I'm going to actually, let me go ahead and read an article today about it. So let's go, let's jump into it. I'm going to read it right here. Is, all right, from, let's jump into it. The child, the girl was riding in a car with her mother and an adult friend on I-75/85 when they exited onto University Avenue. Police spokesman said the driver tried to turn into a parking lot in the 1200 block of Prior Road, but was confronted by a group of armed individuals who had blocked the entrance. At some point, someone in the group opened fire on the vehicle, striking it multiple times and striking the child who was inside. All right. The child, the driver took the child to Atlanta Medical Center. She did not survive her injuries. I also want to share something here with you guys as well, about something that her dad mentioned. Okay. And I want to kind of, I let you guys see here this, and I'm going to go ahead and bring this out to you. I think this should be able to let you guys hear this, but let's see.
They say Black Lives Matter. You killed your home.
Wait. Can y'all hear this before I keep playing it? Okay. So let's rewind. I'm sorry.
They say Black Lives Matter. You killed your home. Killed your own this time. Just because of burial. They killed my baby because she crossed the burial and made a U-turn. You killed a child. She ain't do nothing to nobody.
They didn't give us time to make a U-turn. They started shooting on my car before we could even make a U-turn. Shooting my tires out. Like, why?
But Black Lives Matter.
My baby was shot in her bed.
Killing your own.
Nobody there to help
you
me.
Killed an 8-year-old child.
Nobody.
She ain't did nothing to now one of y'all. She just wanted to get home to see her cousin. That's all she wanted to do. She just wanted to get home.
So, I wanted to guys to hear that. I mean, the father was talking about this. And you know what? I'm going to start this particular segment with you, Xavier, just to talk about something here. And I'm gonna frame this question. I'm gonna set up this question, but how I'm gonna set up this question is going to I'm gonna tell you right now. It's gonna annoy you, Xavier. How I'm gonna set up this question, Deshaun, you might throw your computer, okay? But I want you to hear. So I'm gonna start off with you, Xavier. Now, just yesterday, you were seen as being divisive, all right, on Facebook. Perfect. For asking people to broaden their definition of what being pro-life means, to care about lives in the womb and after birth. When you begin to take that, try to get people to understand that, people didn't understand what you meant. People began to think that you must mean that you don't care for lives that are being killed by abortion. However, I have to be fair, okay? Don't many Christians do this when we're talking about the Black Lives Matter movement? Black people shout out that Black Lives Matter when police kill Black people. However, when people ask those same Black people to broaden their definition of what Black Lives Matter means to include Black lives that are killed by other Black people, a lot of Black people get upset about that. So why is it okay to broaden the definition of pro-life to lives outside the womb, but not okay to broaden the definition of Black Lives Matter to include Black lives that are killed by other Black people? What's your response to that?
Okay, so I'll share this. Like we talked, I think like two podcasts ago, we were talking about Black on Black crime and how that is an issue. And we discuss how there are already people on the front lines, that there are people on the front lines who are already fighting that fight, you know, me being one of them. You know, I pastor a church in the hood and we're constantly work. I just spent the time in Indiana where we're just working with people who have come from really tough backgrounds and working with different groups of people who exist on different planes. And so that there's that fight that's already going on for Black on Black crime. You know, so that's not, I just feel like when that question is posed, it's posed like there's no one doing anything. like, oh, black people are killing black people. And the percentage, you know, if we want to talk about statistics, the percentage is high for white people too. It's not as high as black people, but it's high. Black people is like 93%, and black people is like 93%, and white people is like 87%. That's still really high. So, and we already can break down about socioeconomic status being grouped together, you know, poverty, all that other stuff. But I'm saying, like, that's already being done. That's neither here nor there. But we learned a principle that we learned in high school. If your friends jump off a bridge, are you going to jump off a bridge too? You know what I'm saying? If your friends jump off a bridge, you're going to jump off a bridge too? Which means that I don't care at what kind of rate black people are killing black people. That doesn't mean that white people should be able to kill black people too, because black people are being killed, or that police should up their police brutality because, well, black people kill black people, so we should get involved and kill black people too. Like, that's not, that doesn't work like that. But for anybody who asked the question, why isn't it being expanded, then, you know what I'm saying? Then number one, I'm going to say that you're not looking deep enough, because there's already work being done with that. And then a second point in there is that not the hood's going to do the hood stuff. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm not saying that's okay, but not everybody's going to, like, sadly, not everybody's going to be on the wave of the sanctity of life. You know what I'm saying? I'm on the wave of sanctity of life, no matter what your skin color or gender or sexual orientation is, like, regardless of who I am as a pastor, like, the sanctity of life is important. People should be treated the way that we want to be treated. That's point blank. Not everybody shares that. You know what I'm saying? Some people, I know that if I go down to Paramore or Mercy Drive right now in the middle of the night, there's a high percent chance that I can get myself hurt. And they don't care that I'm black. You know what I'm saying? And so I'm not, like, different area, like, not everybody's, we're not in a perfect society. Like, we're not in a utopia. And so you're going to find out where there are people that just, they're not really with it. And you can't account for those people. So I think it's unfair to say something like that, or how can you fight for the sanctity of life but then not expand on the fact that, like, black people need to take better care of black people. And it's kind of like, it's apples and oranges. It's always going to be apples and oranges. You can't use another fight with another situation to defend while you're doing a fight in this situation. Like, that doesn't make sense to me.
Okay, so let's talk about this, okay? Because I am going to be devil's advocate for all this right now, okay? So don't think that I believe any of this, but let's just say this for a second. Now, the issue that for many people that are pro-life, they're just like, this is the only thing that I care about, is about people being born. People need to be born. They don't care about the quality of life afterwards. They only care about birth. So why are you trying to make people care about a separate issue? Because you said that we should expand the definition, but why do I need to? Because I just need to care about one issue. I want people to be born. Why do I got to care about another separate issue, right? Or just like the same argument with, why in the world should we care about, a lot of people say, I just want to care about one issue at a time. So I want to care about this one issue about police brutality. I don't want to care about, I don't say I don't want to care, but I mean, other people doing that. That ain't for me, okay? When I say Black Lives Matter, I'm only talking about those Black lives that are, that have to deal with that, right? So before you respond to that, I mean, Deshaun, I know you wanna throw something at me right now, even mentioning this, but let's talk about it. Like, why is it that, for example, it's never the right time to talk about black crime, because we can sit back and say, white people shoot each other, right, at 80-some percent. That's true, but we still gotta be honest with the fact of black people still kill each other at a higher rate, okay? You don't matter how you look at it, it's one of the top reasons. Let's look at this. I'm gonna show you right now. I'm gonna say the 10 leading causes of death among black US residents. This is in 2017, right? So we got the normal stuff, disease of the heart, cancers, accidental death, stroke, diabetes, chronic lower respiratory. And then right after that is assault, homicide. Boom, dead. And everything else has to do with, like, health related issues, right? In the top 10 leading ones, right? I even went to the top 10 leading cause of death among the white population, and nothing in that top 10 has to do with homicide. So I have to ask you, Okay, I have to ask you, when is it an appropriate time to address the fact that Black people kill each other at a higher rate? It's never a good time. If I mention it, you know, when about Rashard Brooks, if I mention it about, it's not a good time. So tell me, when is it a good time to talk about it?
All right, anyway, yeah, the answer to, and this is specifically for your white listeners who I see arguing in Xavier's comments and your comment sections every day. You can talk about Black on Black crime when you go pick a broom up. When you go out to the hood and do something about it, then you can talk about it. Because you only seem to care about it when we're talking about police killing Black people. You don't give a damn about us killing each other until we're talking about y'all killing us. And you're like, well, I mean, Chicago. Are you from Chicago? Have you ever been to Chicago? Have you ever gone to Chicago and picked a broom up? Have you ever gone to a Stop the Violence rally? Because how many of us four Black men know the hashtag Stop the Violence? Yeah. How many of us four Black men remember Boys in the Hood at the end? That, like, if people know what's going on in the hood, they don't care, or they don't know, or they don't show. That's what Ice Cube said in 1991 in Boys in the Hood. Y'all know good and well what's happening in the hood. You don't give a damn about it unless it's disputing white people killing us. Because I know Xavier talk about Black on Black crime all day, because Xavier's doing the work to stop it. I live in Pensacola now. You go on Facebook and search Pensacola Stop the Violence. We got Stop the Violence basketball tournaments. We got Stop the Violence rallies. We got Stop the Violence protests, marches. We got people trying to give food and money out in the hood. We got block parties trying to get kids to stop shooting each other. You're not doing the work. You don't get to talk about it. And to Xavier's pro-life point, the difference between Black on Black crime / Black Lives Matter versus Xavier's pro-life point is Xavier's asking you to expand your empathy. No one saying Black Lives Matter doesn't have empathy for other Black people, especially us Black people. You're not going to find a single Black person who's like, well, Black Lives Matter, the police don't kill us. But I mean, if niggas pop each other in the hood, I don't care. Like, no Black person saying Black Lives Matter is going to say that. Our empathy's been expanded. We have empathy for ourselves when we're doing it and when the police are doing it. Y'all pro-life people, obviously y'all know I'm not pro-life, so I'm saying y'all pro-life people who don't care what happens after the womb, you can't expand your empathy past the womb. That's your problem. Fix that. Reread Xavier's Facebook post, because I read it and it made perfect sense to me. Because I understand that when a kid leaves the womb, you don't care if they live in the hood. When that kid gets shot by another Black person in the hood, like that 8-year-old girl, y'all would have pushed for her to be born, but you're not going to push for her to have conditions that keep her safe in her neighborhood. That's what Xavier's point was. And like I said, in terms of Black on Black crime, go pick a broom up. Go to the hood and do something about it, or shut up. I don't want to hear about Chicago if you're not from Chicago, because I follow folks from Chicago, activists in Chicago, who do the work. There's a teacher I follow out there. She's not even an activist. She's just a teacher. She goes out on the weekends and just has a trunk full of snacks and just drives around the hood and gives snacks to kids and stuff. Talks to them. Make sure they're staying out of trouble. Her students, kids in the neighborhood she teaches in. Make sure they're good on the weekends for the free. No one's asking her to do that. No one's giving her credit for that. I know because I follow her on Twitter. And I only know that because she tweets sometimes, hey, y'all, we're on 79th and so-and-so. We got snacks and juice boxes. Tell the kids to pull up. And no one else would know about that otherwise. So like I said, it's the right time to talk about Black on Black crime when you do the work. When you're trying to alleviate the poverty in the hood. When you're trying to get the guns out the hood. When you're trying to get the drugs out the hood. That's when you can talk about it. But until then, get off Facebook. Delete your Facebook comment, because we don't want to hear it.
Okay. So you know what? But you know what? I hear all that. I hear what you're saying. Okay. I hear what you're saying, Deshaun. But I gotta ask you, DJ. I mean, you as a police officer, man, I don't want to sound like a Republican, okay? But I've seen all the think pieces, okay, about how to fix the police. The police need reform. I hear all the think pieces, the books that were laid out. But where are the books about Black on Black crime, but how to fix that? Y'all so quick on trying to fix the police, okay, when y'all killing yourselves more than the police killing y'all, okay? So let me ask you, DJ, man, what can we do to fix the issue when it comes to these Black, because if we're gonna be honest, it's sad hearing about an 8-year-old girl getting shot and killed for no reason. It's sad hearing about the violence that, if we're going to be honest, and some of y'all don't want to be honest up in here, but there's a lot of Black people that have died during some of these protests for this Black Lives Matter stuff, where there's always an extra little group that infiltrates this Black Lives Matter thing, and Black death follows it, okay? But we're going to talk about that maybe another time, okay? Now, DJ, I'm asking you, what can we do to fix the black homicide rates that's going on in the black community? What would you say, DJ?
Well, I think, because, I mean, all the stuff that we're talking about is complex, of course. And it's funny because the more that I listen to Xavier, the more that I listen to Deshaun, I'm realizing, I'm like, bro, like, we are all, in a different way, basically saying the same thing. And I think that what we need to do as a society on all sides, I don't care if you're Republican, Democrat, liberal, conservative, Christian, unchristian, whatever. I think that where we need, what we need to do is we need to have more empathy, you know? Because, like, listening to what Deshaun's saying, you know, like, I'm sitting there, I'm like, dang, okay, so Deshaun sound kind of like I did when I'm talking about, yo, you want to reform police? Get in my car and let's go. You know, like, let's ride if you want to do that. Otherwise, I don't want to hear it. And, you know, I think the problem that we run into is that we're so focused on our thing that we have problems listening to what other people are trying to say. You know what I'm saying? And so I think just having empathy and being open to listening first and foremost. So, like, little situations like this where we can just sit down and talk and just talk about it and listen to where other people are coming from, it is paramount to stopping a lot, or at least to get the ball rolling on stopping things. Because if we're not in solidarity about this stuff, then it's not gonna matter. Because I totally agree when people come out and they talk about Chicago and black on black crime when we're talking about a police shooting, whether the shooting was justified or not. But, like, when that happens, then all of a sudden you see this spike in, well, Chicago and black on black crime. And then the internet is flooded with, hey, here's a police officer who stopped after work to eat lunch with black children, you know? And it's just like, it's ridiculous. You know, I'm like, we don't need that. I'm like, okay, if we want to stop, I'll stop saying black on black crime. If we want to stop crime, okay, because white on white crime is high, crime in Hispanic neighborhoods is high, black on black crime is high, whatever, because you live in the same demographic, you kill each other. That's how it goes. Okay, so how do we stop that entirely? Okay, and I really think, like, we do have to stop and we have to listen. And then on top of that, we have to stop talking so much about it, because we have these conversations all the time. What can we do to stop? What can we do to stop? But how often are we actually doing things? And I know, like, Xavier's out there doing stuff. You know, I see the stuff that you be doing on Facebook, man, and it's legit. And, you know, I know Deshaun's out there doing stuff. And I know, Shelton, you are very vocal and you like to work with kids on, you know, how to be better. And, you know, for me, I can only speak in a smaller sense, but I think as a police officer, what I want to do is, you know, and my department does a pretty good job with this as far as community relations goes, but, I mean, going out to the inner city, going out to places that we know are troubled, and just having not just like a police presence, but like just going out there and being a mentor to a kid, you know, because my department does that. We do that, going out, mentoring kids. We'll go out there, hey, we'll play basketball with kids. We'll do all, and I don't mean like on duty, but I mean like off duty. Like, hey, we'll organize this. We'll go out here. We'll play ball with y'all. We'll hang out with the Boys and Girls Club. We'll host birthday parties for foster kids. I mean, like, we do all sorts of things like that. And I think putting an emphasis on pick up your broom, go to the hood and get your feet wet. Go do work, you know? And the problem is we got to stop pointing fingers at, well, this white person over here is not doing anything. Well, you black people, you're not doing anything. Like, just stop pointing fingers at everybody else, because I can't control what everyone else does. I can control what I do. And so I can pick up my broom and go and do. And you know what? I can bring some people with me, you know, the ones who want to come, bring them with me. Let's go. And really, in the words of Michael Jackson, if you want to make the world a better place, take a look at yourself and make the change. That's kind of where I'm at.
I like that, man. And I have to say this before we go is, you know, we should, right? Black people should care, because we're doing, there's some crime that we're doing that's at a higher rate and all this stuff and all that good stuff. I'm going to show y'all. I'm going to share a little something from y'all from the FBI. I'm going to show y'all a little something, though. All right. I'm going to share this with y'all. And you look at this. This is from 2017. So Crime of the United States in 2017, right? And you look here for murder, right? You see murder here, and you see that, you know, 53% of arrests for murder have been Black and African American people, right? But pretty much, and I ain't trying to, you know, we can make this, you know, thing. But if you go through all of this stuff, for the most part, everything else is white people. Look at this. Look at it. The total number of arrests in 2017 for crime, 68.9% were white people. Listen, this the percent distribution, okay? 68.9%. So think about it. 8 million arrests, over 8 million arrests. 5 million, almost 5.5, over 5.5 million arrests were white folks, right? And the reason why I'm saying is, like, I think sometimes people love to talk about, and it's wrong. Don't get me wrong. I understand murder is a terrible thing. But no one ever talks about, man, a lot of y'all white people, y'all raping people. A lot of y'all white people, aggravated assault, 62% of aggravated assault are white people. 67.5% of white people are arrested for burglary. 67.7% is larceny theft. 71.3% is arson. But we love to pick and choose what we talk about. And you can look at this. I can send y'all this later. But it's just interesting to me that we love to pick and choose, because I think a lot of us, low-key, that bring on these black-on-black crime statistics, you honestly believe that white people are superior. Like, and it's the white supremacy, a lot of the stuff that we love to talk about is embedded in a lot of our DNA. And this is, if we talk about this, a lot of us, we don't love each other. We don't treat, black people sometimes don't treat each other well, because it's in our DNA that we don't matter. We don't care. Sometimes we look at black businesses, black owned businesses, as cheaper, discounted, not the best quality things, because we've been for some reason desensitized to believe in some of these, what I would say, bad stereotypes or bad things about black people. And I think that if you believe that the wage of sin is death, and all men, that everybody in here have committed sin, then we should stop trying to pick different things to choose to just sit back and say, hey, you black people are the worst type of sinners, when there's nothing in the word of God or scripture that you can ever point that to. And I don't know why we want to go to one demographic and be like, hey, you black people are the worst. I don't understand it. I don't understand why Christians do that the most. I don't understand why Christians would sit back and just say, you black people, I mean, we're going to just talk about your black on black crime so much. Why is that such a big deal, especially in Christian circles, where they want to pull these stats to make black people seem like we're animals? Like, and I'm going to talk to you, Pastor Xavier, man. Like, why do you think that people want to pull these statistics about black people and not care about anything else or other statistics where other ethnicities are committing crime?
The natural defense in that is because people are more inclined to want to defend themselves when they feel attacked. Right? So they start taking it personal. And so instead of just being like, oh, let me, you start taking it personal, you start thinking about, oh, like, let me, instead of saying, like, let me look and check my own cultural biases, we want to go into a place where we want to just immediately start trying to defend ourselves. And that's what people do. Well, there's no way they can say this about me and say anything about that. You know what I'm saying? Because they do this, they do that, they do that. It's like my wife and I, we practice this thing, is that when someone, if my wife comes to me and says, babe, like, you hurt my feelings, like, the proper thing for me to do is for me to say, how did I hurt your feelings and what can I do to make sure it doesn't happen again? That's the proper response. I'm not supposed to be like, oh, well, yesterday you hurt me or the other day you did this. That's not the way that it's supposed to happen. If someone says that you hurt, that they've been hurt, you address that right then and there. But what a lot of people want to do is they want to throw these statistics out, is because they feel victimized by being told those things. Like, is your name Derek Chauvin? No, then why are you acting like it is your name? Like, why are you acting like that? That was you that did that. Why are you acting, you know what I'm saying? People take stuff so personal like that, that they can't even consult like their own cultural position. They want to defend that cultural position. And that's a lot of the reason why we end up getting into those kind of discussions, because nobody wants to accept that that's the kind of perception that's out there. Let me read this to you real quick. This is from one of my books here in college, in my multicultural counseling class. It said this: white psychological responses to racism and white privilege are linked to how they orient themselves with people of color. Responses can include, number one, a minimizing the notion that racism and white privilege exist in general or for particular individuals. So number one, we hear that all the time, right? They want to debunk the fact that white privilege exists. Number two, locating instances in which people of color are to blame for and white people are deserving of the experiences they respectively have, right? So we just talked about that. Instances where the people of color are to blame for it, right? They're to blame for it. And then third, drawing attention to specific instances of racism and white privilege in a general society or their personal experiences. And so what do they want to do? They want to debunk it and draw attention to specific instances like that, like we just mentioned. So instead of saying, hey, this happened, they'll say, well, black people kill themselves at 93%. So what do you want to say about that? You know what I'm saying? Instead of addressing the actual issue. And so I think it's a personality flaw. There's a personality flaw. If I go and I talk to a white person about police brutality on black Americans, you know what I'm saying? You're going to have one or two groups of people. You're going to have three groups. You're going to have the group one that says, hey, I don't quite understand, but help me understand. You're going to have the second group that says, you know what? You're right. And that is a truth. And I'm going to stand with you to make sure that we see the change that, you know, be the change that we wish to see. Right. And you're going to have that third group that says, well, yeah, you want to talk about that, but you don't talk about how all the blacks are killing all the blacks. Right. And you start breaking it down. And so you have a group that says, I don't know, but I like to know. A group that says, I do know, and I want to be a part of the change. And a group that says, yeah, I know, and I hear what you're saying, but nah, y'all do other stuff, so that's not important. And that's where we kind of get to, is that people got to really consult their own cultural bias, because when you start to, they start identifying with the person who committed the crime. They start identifying with that person, being like, well, you know what? And like that one guy said, remember on that post, and he was talking about, I can understand how the police officers can feel this way. Remember we were talking about that?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Old boy said that. And it's like, you start identifying, like, he just killed somebody. What do you mean you identify with him? You know what I'm saying? But we don't want to consult the fact that people will say, oh, well, I don't, America, you know, slavery happened all this kind of, this many years ago, we should bury that. That's old stuff. I didn't own any slaves, yada, 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 yada. But why are you still carrying the same mentality? You're still carrying the same mentality, because whenever you address something like that, your first inclination is to feel as though you're a victim when someone claims to be a victim. If someone says, if a girl comes, like Americans do it, like a girl says, oh, I got raped, they'll be like, well, you know what? That young boy's life is ruined now. Good job, you whore. You know what I'm saying? Like that's how we do stuff here. We wanna deflect stuff from the present issue, because it makes us, it negates the fact that a lot of American history is, for lack of a better phrase, a lot of white individuals doing a lot of messed up stuff. You know what I'm saying? And whenever we wanna address that, no one's saying that racial injustices or stuff like that, or racial problems don't happen when in other cultural or racial demographics, no one's saying that. But when it's your turn to address what's going on with you, to deflect, it's just like what that comment just said, Deshaun, is you're exposing yourself into where your cultural standing really is, and exposing yourself to what your position really is on these issues, because you don't want to take the time to say, man, you know what? We do have a history of doing this. How can we change?
Yeah.
What can we do to be a part of it? Instead, whenever I talk to someone, my finger is like, you see that? I got a bicep on my finger. You see that? I've been smashing that block button. Smashing it.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Because I'm at the point now, I talk to you about this issue and you start to immediately, they don't even address it anymore. If you look at all the conversations you've had with white people on these issues, they don't even address it. The first thing that they want to do is flip a statistic on you.
Yep.
The first thing, like, why are you so hurt to where you can't even have this conversation without trying to point fingers elsewhere? You know what I'm saying? So I think that's a large part That's a large part of the issue, man. I said a lot of stuff, yeah. But
no, Deshaun,
that's a large part of the issue.
I want to ask you this, Deshaun, and I know you're not you know I know you're not a Christian. We already had that episode already before previously, but I want to talk about. I want you to just use your history degree or your and even to analyze, like, why do you think so many people who are identify as Christian, right? And supposed to, there's a lot of things that embody that word, right? Or that identity. But yet at the same time, they love to put out these statistics like black on black crime. Or like a lot of these things, or a lot of these statistics about, well, you guys don't care about each other because of abortion, or you guys are killing each other. It, all of these things just to have this framework that black people are animals, that black people are terrible people, that black people always do the worst things. Why do you think, you know, for yourself analyzing these type of Christians, why do you think that is?
All right. So to the listeners, I'm going to say something, and then you have to give me, like, 2 minutes to explain what I'm about to say before you get mad. Like, don't pause, don't cut it off, don't start writing me an angry Facebook message. Let me finish, and then you can be mad. You're a white supremacist. Like, I don't know. You're a white supremacist, and it's not – I'm sorry. When y'all see the video, you'll see why I chuckled. But no, you're a white supremacist.
Show it, you're going to post that clip.
Yeah, Sheldon's reaction made me laugh. I'm sorry, y'all. No, you're a white supremacist. But let me finish. Let me explain what I mean. All right, so this is me breaking down American history. And to y'all listening, I have a bachelor's degree in history. I've written 15, 20-page papers on race, on the FBI, on slavery. I've taken entire courses just on slavery. And not American slavery. We did West Indian and South American slavery. So I'm well-rounded on the topic, like I said. So y'all want to come talk to me, Do your reading first. Do your Googles first. But you're a white supremacist because in America, okay, so when America was founded, right, it was founded by white Christian straight males, land-owning white Christian slave males. So to break that down, straight men who were white who had money, capitalism, patriarchy, Christianity, and we can throw homophobia in there with the patriarchy. So if you were part of that in-group, white supremacy is part, this is the thing that I had to learn, not recently, because I've been unlearning these things, but I heard a phrase from an activist recently that really put it into great words. Even as a black person, you have to kill the white supremacist in your own head. If you're a straight white man, that homophobia you harbor, that's white supremacy. That's from the in-group that founded this country. If you're a black man, you're still a man. You have to kill the white supremacist in you that looks down on women. If you're white, you have to kill the white supremacist in you that attaches your whiteness to attacking black people. And if you're a Christian, I'm sorry to say, American Christianity is rooted in white supremacy. It justified slavery. It's justified horrors for the last 3 centuries. It's not your fault. I'm not blaming the entire religion of Christianity. Me, Sheldon, and Xavier have talked about this a bunch of times. Christianity is not the problem. American Christianity is rooted in white supremacy. So you have to kill the white supremacist in your own Christianity, in your own faith. The same way I, as a straight black man, had to kill the white supremacist that made me believe in the patriarchy, that made me believe in capitalism, that made me believe in homophobia, even though I'm still black. And for that note, I had to kill the white supremacist that had me looking down on black people. Me and Shelton talk about it all the time. 6 years ago, I was like, why are y'all mad at George Zimmerman? I mean, Trayvon Martin attacked them. There's those Facebook posts. I would say they're there, but they're not there because I deleted them because I'm embarrassed by them. Because I hadn't killed the white supremacist in my own self yet. I was still dealing with that. Most of what we learn in America is rooted in white supremacy. It's rooted in straight white Christian males dominating. And as you can see it in the cultural war that's happening in America now, as straight white Christian males lose power, they push back and overreact. That's why there's Reddit threads dedicated to them wanting to kill people and being angry. And like, why don't women like us, you know, American straight men, like, anymore? Like, why aren't we getting favored anymore? Like, because we're trying to balance the country out because everyone else has a voice all of a sudden, and they're overreacting. And I'm sorry to you Christians. I'm not a Christian anymore, but I'm telling you, you have to kill the white supremacists that's tied to your Christianity. There's nothing in the Bible that talks about black-on-black crime. There's nothing in the Bible that talks about, what's like another common issue? Like, abortion is obviously brought up in the Bible, but me and Shelton have talked about it. There's nothing in the Bible that says the laws of your country have to follow your faith. There's nothing in the Bible that talks about you needing to outlaw gay marriage because you personally don't believe in homosexuality. Like, that's you buying into American Christianity as a cultural movement. The same way me and X grew up in a church that taught us that we weren't supposed to, like, women shouldn't wear pants. That's cultural. That's what you interpreted that scripture about men, about women and men's clothing. That's how you interpreted that in your 1950s American Christianity, and your pastor learned that 60 years ago and keep saying it, so you keep repeating it. You need to apply the Bible to your present cultural situations and stop repeating what somebody said 70 years ago, 100 years ago. So like I said, if you are tired of Shelton and Xavier blocking you on Facebook, if you're tired of them getting mad at you, kill the white supremacists in your faith, or like I said, or shut up. Do the work. Because like I said, I had to do the work. I spent years reading books, trying to understand, talking with Xavier till 3-4 in the morning, talking with Shelton till all hours of the night, discoursing on where we messed up, on the sunken place, and all that stuff. Because just as black people, as black men, we have patriarchy, homophobia, and internalized racism to unlearn. If you're a white Christian, I'm sorry, you just got more work to do than we did. And we had to unlearn racism, and we're black. So imagine being white. You have to unlearn that I have a lot of white allies, so don't get me wrong that I have an issue with white people. In fact, in a lot of the organizing spaces I'm in, it's a lot of white people because they've done the work to unlearn to kill the white supremacists, the phrase that I keep repeating, but to just unlearn those hateful ideologies. And a lot of times they'll help in the organizing spaces, but they'll give black people the lead on talking because they're like, this is not about me. They're not trying to like appease their guilt. Like, oh, I was a racist white person for so many years. I have to do better now. No, they're like, I just need to do the work because black people deserve better. And that's it. Point blank, period. They'll step back. They'll shut up. They'll let us talk. Because they're not trying to appease their own guilt. They're trying to actually do better. So like I said, if you're in Xavier and Shelton's comment sections getting mad, if you're going to be on the Weird Pastor Kid Facebook group getting mad, hey, at me if you need to. But your Christianity is rooted in white supremacy. You're a white supremacist. I was a white supremacist. We all were taught white supremacy in grade school, middle school, high school, and even in a lot of colleges. Ask my history major friends who were obsessed with American war, but not with colonialism, not with what happened to the indigenous people, but they were in love with World War II. We were taught it in colleges. There's history guys I knew who only took war classes. They know everything about Nazi Germany, but they don't know anything about the indigenous tribes that were in North America before the settlers showed up. They don't know anything about what slave conditions were like in the Bahamas, Barbados, Jamaica. They don't know any of that, even though that's history too. That's history that relates to our lives. But their study of history is rooted in white supremacy. And like I said, that's a radical statement. A lot of y'all are going to have to turn me off a few minutes ago, and I'm sorry. Well, that's me coming from the leftist space, me being all the way over to the left, where I've done the work and done the reading and unlearned a lot. And if you're ready to do the work, like I said, we can refer you to a lot of places to start doing the work, but you've got to do the work.
Yeah. Wow. I feel like you need to drop the mic because you just dropped it. I mean, you just killed that. Like, you killed that statement. And I want to just know, I know I'm talking to some people here who they're listening, and these are some tough conversations to hear. Like, wait a minute, bringing up black on black crime is part of white supremacy. Like, bringing up all these statistics about the negative of black people is I'm a white supremacist. Like, you know, you're like, what are you talking about? A lot of you guys are already tuning people out, already got you. I know right now, I'm gonna get some emails, okay? I already can see I'm gonna get some Facebook messages, I'm gonna get some text messages about that statement. But I'm going, and this, I didn't even want to talk about it on this episode, but I will probably talk about this. Actually, you know what? This is a perfect setup. Next week, okay, we're going to talk about, one thing we're going to talk about is, in a deeper way, white supremacy and the ties it has with Christianity. And if you want to learn, we will be there to help you, okay, a little bit, okay? But I mean, everything that Deshaun is saying is true. Like, you have got to, and as a Christian, there's many verses in the Bible that talks about you asking God to, go, you know, looking, you know, I forget the verse right now, cause my brain is failing me, but you're asking God to, like, you know, say, hey God, show me where my faults are at, you know? And basically saying, God, show me where, you know, the issues and the problems that I have. And then so that I can kind of destroy those things. And so some of us gotta, if you're a Christian, if you're somebody listening, you're a Christian, you got to ask God, God, where's the sexism that's in me? And guess what, ladies, some of you got to do that too. I went to churches my whole life where some of the people that were the most sexist were women. They were the ones who were you know, I've heard this at a Christian college that both of us love, where it was the ladies who felt like it was their job to sit back and say, you know, say things. And I don't want to repeat some of the things that some of these ladies who were in power said to these other ladies about how they were dressed and what they were doing. And they were thinking that they were doing this in the name of Jesus, but it was really sexist behavior. It was really like, hey, you know, as women, we're here and men are here. Okay. And you need to do everything that you can to make sure that you don't cause a man to lust. Like, wait, I want y'all to think about that. Men, I mean, we're grown. We don't need you, because a lot, and we'll talk about this for another time, but like, lust is a choice. It does not matter what she wore. You chose to lust, okay? And so I think that there is a problem with us when we try to put all the emphasis on the lady and none on our response. And I think that's an issue and a problem. But we're going to talk about that maybe another time. We're going to talk about the sexism. We're going to talk about the racism and things of that nature that we deal with in the church. And I think that would be helpful for us to kind of learn. And yes, Psalm 139:23. Thank you, my man. But that is, actually, you know what, Pastor, could you read that for us, man? Read Psalm 139:23 for us, and then we're going to get up on out of here.
Are you talking about the one about search me, O God? And
yes.
Know my
yes.
heart, try me and know my thoughts, and see if there be any wicked way in me, and lead me in the way everlasting.
Yes. God needs, there's the wicked way in us for a lot of us is that white supremacy. The wicked way in us is this is, and just to break it down a little bit easier, there's some of us have the racism on us. Some of us have the sexism, you know, in us. Some of us have the homophobia in us. Some of us have these things, and we've got to ask God to root out the evilness that is inside of us so that we can actually, live the Christian life the way that we should. And I will leave us with this. A lot of times with Christianity, and I'm going to just say this, for there's nothing wrong with the Word of God. We have the Word of God. That's awesome. But a lot of us are just guessing on this Christianity thing, okay? We are trying to live this. We're trying to live this good book out the best that we can. And this is why many people did not allow the Bible to change them culturally. They allowed the culture to shape how they live their Christian faith. And many of us, hey, that's why there's many Christian people that identify as Christian that were slave owners, and many of them that were segregationists, many of them that were all these different things. And this is why so many people don't want to be Christian, because they say, hey, you guys were out here killing people in the name of Jesus. So I don't want nothing to do with Christianity. Okay. And so one day we're going to talk about how just because people may have practiced Christianity the wrong way is not an indictment on Christianity as a whole. We'll talk about that another time. Anyways, if you listen to this podcast and you're like, man, these guys are weird, you're absolutely right. Listen to the podcast and like, man, Shelton, you are definitely a pastor's kid trying to pull out that Bible verse. You're absolutely right as well. This is the Weird Pastor's Kid podcast. Thank you for listening.